You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. My name is Joe Pritchard, and with me, as usual, is Dr. Rouge. And Dr. Rouge, you got us a couple guests tonight.
Oh, tonight is going to be fun. The first gentleman you're going to talk to, I met at the Grey Cup in Ottawa last year, although I believe he was on the show last year as well prior to that. And Ron Montgomery is one of those just, you know, rabid football fans, but not one of those sort of, I just like this team because I like this team. He's got some real great stories to tell about his interest in the CFL, his interest in Auburn Tigers football. And then a little bit later, we're going to be joined by one of his friends, a gentleman by the name of Paul Brindley. And I promise not to laugh too hard as the three of us share with you the story of Lines, the Auburn-Alabama football game, and last year's Grey Cup in Ottawa.
Well, I am certainly looking forward to it. It's actually a story I've never heard, so you'll be getting my reactions fresh.
When you and I earlier today got this planned, I was chuckling already.
Good, good. And like you said, we had Ron on last year, but maybe refresh people's memories, Ron, of who you are, why you like the CFL, and definitely plug your Facebook group, too.
Oh, certainly. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I certainly enjoyed it last year and appreciate you having me on tonight. I'm in that later stage of life. I turned 60 a while back, so I have been a fan of the CFL since the days of Dieter Brock, who is a young man that I think all CFL fans remember. He played his football in Alabama at Auburn and Jacksonville State, and then he went up to the CFL, and that's kind of when I first became aware of the CFL. I was a young teenager at that point, and I've kept up with the league ever since then with Doug Flutie and other players that had great runs up there. And, of course, we even had a CFL team in Birmingham, Alabama back in 1995, and we supported it and went to those games. Those were a lot of fun. The financial aspect of that team didn't work out, so it folded after a year. And about 6 years ago, I was channel surfing and came across a CFL game, and it was like I just remembered it all. It's like, wow, this is great. And then I realized that with the Internet and ESPN Plus, or ESPN 3 as it was, I could see every game. And there's plenty of websites and Facebook pages and Twitter feeds that will keep you up on it, and so I just really got into it again, and started to meet some great people through social media, and we made our first trip to a ball game up in 2015, and we saw Hamilton play two games, and then we went up to Ottawa and watched them play a game, and I've been to two Grey Cups, and I'll be going to my third Grey Cup in November. So I'm pretty well lit up with it, just like you guys are. I know I see you on the social media that I'm on every day. And we even have a little group that I started over a year ago. It's on Facebook. It's called CFL Fans in the SEC, and it's just a real loosely run group that very fortunate to have some really nice people on there. And I would encourage any of the listeners to join our group. We mostly talk about CFL football. Occasionally we'll talk about some other brand of football, but that's mostly what we talk about is CFL and a lot of the Southern players, guys that we watched in college that are now in the CFL. We like to keep up with their careers and where they're playing and how things are going for them.
Good, good. And I'm hoping I get to bump into you sometime in Edmonton. And I've been trying to talk the doctor into making another trip up to a Grey Cup, but it sounds like that's not in the cards for him this year. But I'll keep on him about next year, too.
Well, if you're going to be there, Joe, we need to hook up.
Oh, you guys would definitely like each other. You know, Ron, you were I guess you and I found each other in line for the CFL fans event with the commissioner right before – I guess it was 2 days before the game, if I remember right. And we eventually ended up going to lunch and you know, whatever else. I think by the time that you and your lovely wife and Paul and his lovely wife got on the airplane going home, it must have been like, man, that Moretti guy really is as crazy as we thought he was. But you were telling me some really fascinating stories, and I don't know if you shared them with Oz and with Joe last year, but you have come to know Chris Jones – in a pretty good way, and I think because you see him A, in the off season, and B, in the South, where you know that's home in the literal sense of the word for him, you've gotten to see a man who is perhaps far more far more down to earth, far more humble, far more generous than I think the public persona sort of leads us to think he's like. If you've got a story or two that sort of comes to mind about Chris Jones and your experiences with him, go ahead and drop it in on us.
Well, I surely would like to do that, be glad to do that. We live about 90 miles from South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, which is where Coach Jones grew up and went to school and still lives in the off season with his wife and children. And they have something up there every year called the Cornbread Festival. And it's a huge event. It's a huge community festival and it's a lot of fun and they have all kind of things to do there. And it's all centered around baking cornbread and having a contest. And that's also the hometown of the Lodge cast iron skillets. Maybe your grandmother had those, you know, and the factory is still there and they still make those great cast iron kitchen utensils. And so it's a really big deal. Now, me and my wife had planned to go to this festival and we did not know that's where Chris Jones lived, and we weren't tying this in with CFL at all. But when we got up there, we picked up a brochure or a newspaper and started reading, and it said that the Grey Cup is going to be at the festival with head coach Chris Jones. And, you know, he won the Grey Cup with Edmonton and had just moved to Saskatchewan. This would have been in April of that year. And I'm like, holy cow, you know, the Grey Cup's going to be here. Chris Jones is going to be here. Now, frankly, most of the people in Tennessee and Alabama didn't know what that was or why this was a big deal. But, you know, we went on down there, and we met him, and we chatted with him. And he was very congenial and very friendly, and he told us that his mother was a kindergarten teacher there all her life and that that this festival had always been a big part of the town and he's always a volunteer there and he always helps out. And so, you know, we kind of met him and like you meet anybody, it's like, well, okay. Well, the next year we come back and he's not being any kind of a celebrity at this point. There's no Grey Cup. There's no TSN crew following him around. You know, Brody Lawson and that group was with him the year before. And so he's just driving a golf cart and hauling drinks and hauling ice to the festival. I mean, he's just working, man. And so we stopped him and he said, yeah, I remember you guys from last year. And we chatted and everything, and we dropped the deal that, hey, we'd love to come up and see a game at Mosaic this year in Regina. And he's like, wow, you guys are going to come up? I was like, yeah, we plan to. And so we did. Well, he says, well, look me up if you get up there. And we kind of look at each other like, really? And then he gave us contact information just right there on the spot. And I'm not going to go into a long story, but we have interacted with him several times and got to know him and his family on a personal level. And they're just super people. They're just super people. Now, you know, they help the community. They help a lot of people out down there that, you know, that's not a rich community. That's kind of mm-hmm. a poor community, just be honest about it. And you know, Chris Jones and his family do a lot of things for a lot of people that don't get a lot of attention, and they don't want any attention from it. But now here's the thing that I want to assure everybody. There is nobody in the world that is more serious about winning football games than this gentleman. He lives it, breathes it, sleeps it. We really don't sleep. That's kind of the kicker. I mean, you know, if you had an employee working for you, you couldn't imagine having anybody that would give more effort to whatever the job was than this guy does. I mean, his work ethic is amazing, and his study habits and everything. So that's kind of my Chris Jones story. We're really, you know, he reminds me a lot of the people like Nick Saban, you know, who are just totally committed to the cause. I mean, and the cause is putting the best football team out there that he knows how to do.
And one of the beautiful things about this league is that you can have those moments. You can have the personal touch with your favorite coaches, your favorite players, because they're so accessible and they're very willing with their time. They're very happy to see you, and you don't really get that anywhere else these days. It's really nice to hear a personal story about a guy that definitely doesn't get cast in the best of lights at times, especially when things aren't going so well in Saskatchewan, they've been on and off, not good, not good, and good, not good. And you always hear all the negatives, but it's really nice to hear some positives about him, and mm-hmm. especially what kind of a person he is.
Yeah, he really has, you know, there's a whole side to him that absolutely most people don't see. And it's not that he's unfriendly, and it's not that he don't want to get involved. He's working all the time. I mean, this guy took 2 weekends off the whole year. He took off Christmas and New Year's. And if you'll check the Riders' open tryout schedule, he hosted an open tryout somewhere every other weekend. I mean, every weekend in the off season, he's flying into some college football field, and it's been advertised, and, you know, he'll have as many as 100 and as few as 5 young men show up that think they want to play football. And he puts them through drills, and he records their times and their speed and whatever analytics he looks at. And then, you know, those are the guys that some of them get invited to mini camp, and some of them make it all the way to training camp and make it on the team. Of course, it gives him a huge Rolodex of people he can call if he needs somebody later in the season. You know, I mean, they've got an endless list of potential players that they can call up if injuries take their toll and he needs somebody, you know.
Hey, Ron, I'm curious, and again, I know it's not like you've known the coach for years upon years upon years, but do you get a sense that he sees the CFL as, you know, whether he's in Saskatchewan for 5 years or 20 years, that's probably, you know, the CFL is his final coaching spot? Do you think he has any hint or any interest in returning stateside at some point?
I don't get that from him, that I do not think he's using this as a stepping stone. I mean, he's been up there now, 15 or 16 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he came from a job with a small college in Tennessee Tech, and somehow he had a connection with Don Matthews, and I think he did some kind of internship at Edmonton, which led to his first job with Montreal and Don Matthews. And, you know, he has said in interviews and said to me that, you know, the CFL has just been really good to me, been good to my family, you know, give me opportunities that I probably wouldn't have had down in the States. And so, you know, I know he loves the game, and he loves to work all aspects. That's why he has so many titles. I mean, you know, he's defensive coordinator, he's head coach, and he's general manager. And he enjoys all of those aspects and is fully immersed in it, probably a lot more so than you actually could be in the States, you know?
Mm-hmm. So many specialists down here, you know, you've got the coach of this, the coach of that, the coach of the other thing, and you know, inside linebackers coach and outside linebackers coach. And it's like, come on, you know, how many linebackers coaches do you need?
Exactly. But, you know, in addition to Coach Jones, I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of other coaches and players and interacting with them. And, you know, you're right. It's just a super league. It's very accessible. You know, you run into these guys at the mall or the restaurant, you know, they'll talk football with you. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have an entourage around them that, you know, going to keep a fan away. And so that's part of the attraction of the league. 9 teams, real easy to keep up with, who the coaches are, who the quarterbacks are. It's just a lot of fun.
Joe, I'll give you the next question. I've been hogging a couple of them.
That's all right. Yeah, so – were you a Saskatchewan fan before or after meeting Coach Jones?
I became a Saskatchewan fan after he went there. When I started really following the league again, I was kind of a generalist. It was kind of like, well, you know, I like the league. And then I kind of focused in on Hamilton. I still like Hamilton real well. Ken Austin was coaching there. He was an Ole Miss former quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And I also looked at the mileage, and I said, gee, if I ever get to go to a game, it'll probably be Hamilton because that's geographically the closest team to where I live. And so, you know, I like to tell people I like Hamilton in the east and I like Saskatchewan in the west. But honestly, I like all the teams. I have great respect for Toronto with Mark Trestman and Jim Popp there. I mean, that's a incredible coach management team. Ottawa's a fun team. I don't have any team that I hate per se or really dislike. I enjoy the whole league and like to see individuals do well on all the teams. I've kind of got favorite players all over the league, but that's kind of how I evolved into a Saskatchewan fan. Now, I will say this, after I went up there and I really met a lot of their fans and have become really good friends with a lot of those guys, they're a special group of people. I mean, they live and eat and breathe football. And, you know, a lot of people say it's because it's a smaller town and it's a rural area with a lot of farming. And that's kind of like where I live. That's where I come from, so I relate to that real well. And, you know, I admire a fan base that is so consumed with their football team, and that's really the way it is down here in the SEC. We're all pretty consumed with our team, and it's enjoyable to be around the Saskatchewan fans.
Now, you mentioned the SEC and the way their fan bases are. There's a former believe it was SEC quarterback. I don't know when the switch happened. I think he was in the SEC at that point. But he is now starting in Montreal. I think we all know his name, but I'm drawing a blank at the moment for some reason. Have you heard any more talk around home about the league because of his presence?
Yeah, I really have. I've had my Facebook pages lined with CFL quotes or posts for several years now, and a lot of people think I'm crazy. And but now that Johnny Football is up there, I've got people asking me questions and asking me what time is the game going to be on and what network or when can I watch it. So he has generated a lot of positive energy for the CFL. No question about it.
All right, we are going to take a short break, and then we have some great stories to tell, Joe, I promise. We are going to be joined when we get back from the break by Ron Montgomery, who we've been talking to, and also a friend of his, Paul Brindley, who both of whom I met for the first time in Ottawa at last year's Grey Cup. So hang tight, quick break, and we'll be back with more of the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast.
We are back with the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast, and I'm being told it's story time.
Oh, it's story time, Joe. It is definitely story time. Just a very quick setup, and then we'll let our second guest introduce himself more fully. But we've been talking to Ron Montgomery, a big CFL fan from SEC country, as he likes to say, with his Facebook page and the group there, of which I think both of us are part of, if I remember correctly. Well, I was fortunate to meet Ron in Ottawa for last year's Grey Cup, both he and his wife, and one of his close friends and that gentleman's wife also were up there. And so the four of them sort of got stuck with my older son and me, sort of ruined the class level that the four of them had. There was no question about that. You had these four really nice people, and then there's these two crazy guys who were with them. But we got a chance to meet Ron and his wife and Paul Brindley and his wife at the CFL fans event with the commissioner the day before or 2 days before the game. And then the day before the game, we decided to take in the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event at an area hotel. And then we all went out to have some lunch, and which eventually turned into dinner and eventually turned into watching the Alabama-Auburn game. I'm going to let you more fully introduce Paul because I'm going to stop chuckling already under my breath, and then we will dive into a little storytelling.
Okay, you want me to introduce Paul for you?
Please do.
Yeah, Paul and I are good friends. Our families are all friends, and we're in the same industry. We're both in the poultry business. And back in June of last year, we were having dinner with Paul and his wife, and we were talking about upcoming trips we had, and we mentioned we were going to the Grey Cup in Ottawa. And Paul said, well, that sounds like fun. We might go with you. And we're like, sure, go with us. And a little bit later, a few weeks later, Paul calls me and says, well, Spring's applying for her passport, and I think we're going. And I really got to take my hat off to him for volunteering to go to Canada in late November. That's a pretty stretch. And they flew up, and we met up with each other and had some good times and visited with some great CFL people like yourself, and we had a snow game, as you remember, and we had Shania Twain at halftime. It doesn't get any more Canadian than that.
That was pretty good.
One of the fun parts of the trip is Paul and I are both Auburn graduates, and watching that game is a big deal to us. So there we all were, you and your son and our friends from Toronto, Bill and Liam Howe, who had earlier that year attended an Auburn game with us. So they were kind of Auburn fans. And, of course, Paul and I were, and you had to be the devil's advocate and be an Alabama fan, so we would give you as hard a time as we possibly could.
Now, before we get into the rest of the story. You have to. Before we get into the rest of the story, though, Paul, we are curious to learn about, I mean, obviously Ron's given us a bit of a hint as to your introduction to CFL life and whatnot. Give us sort of a general sense. I had mentioned earlier today to Ron that, as he knows, one of the things that we like to do on this podcast is to give CFL fans, especially if they're on our side of the border, an opportunity to discuss what they think of the league, how they sort of became attracted to it, if they have a favorite team, et cetera. So fire away. What's your CFL story, so to speak?
Yeah, Ron is definitely my connection into the CFL. I was not aware of all the special rules. You know, that was an eye-opening experience to a guy that's a Southeast Conference guy. But we had a great time coming up there. Just started watching the games, but as we started getting prepared for the Grey Cup, and Ron would send out messages, and I'd see him on Facebook of who's playing when and what, and nothing like getting Canadian beer and watching Canadian football in the South. So it was a little different experience to go up there and watch it. But yeah, it was good. I like the fast-paced part of that the three downs. And seeing it in the snow was definitely the full experience. So we as Ron said, you know, we talked my wife into going with me, and she was a trooper till halftime and then said, you know what, I'm just about done with this snow, stuck it out just a little while longer, and things kind of went downhill from there for her. But, hey, it worked out good for Ron because he upgraded his seats to come with me. His wife and my wife said, we'll meet you somewhere else. So, in the end, it turned out to be a great game, a great experience, and I tell you, the best quote of the night was, I believe Ron looked at me after Shania Twain had just been singing and said, golly, nothing like a bunch of hairy Canadian men singing, man, I feel like a woman with Shania Twain. And that really was the quote of the night as we laughed and had a good time up there.
See, Joe, I told you these two guys together are just an absolute blast. Didn't I warn you about this earlier?
You sure did. I hear there's something about a lime that's coming up.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that in one more second. All right, well, one more question for you, Paul. Have you adopted a favorite team at this point, or a favorite player, anything like that?
Well, you know, I did start watching a little more of the teams because going up to Ottawa, and I've got some business associates there. I think the Red Blacks are more partial to those guys than anybody else. I know Ron's not going to appreciate that. I think he's bleeding this Rough Riders green, but I think the Red Blacks are some kind of got a spot in my heart now after touring their city.
Yeah, I know there's a couple of other Ottawa fans that we know down in the I think they're both in Georgia. I know Ann Almond is down there, and Coach Farr from Athens. I think he also roots for a red and black team out that way that I'm sure you have a less appreciation for. But sounds like the Red Blacks might be taking over the South.
Could be. Yep.
All right. Should we jump in at this point, Joe? Is it time?
Yep, whenever you guys are ready. I've been told. It's
you have to sort of imagine pieces of this as it unfolds. As both Ron and Paul mentioned, collectively we decided to watch the Auburn Alabama game. Ron, Paul, both Auburn grads. My older son is an Auburn fan just because he hates the University of Alabama. So I am, partially because I did want Alabama to win, I'm not kidding, but also because I wanted to sort of inject a little fun into the day, I was rooting for the Crimson Tide. So it's the third quarter-ish, and I think Nick Marshall throws a touchdown pass. Auburn scored somehow. I forget the play offhand. And Paul says to the bartender, put a lime in Anthony's drink. And I'm drinking a glass of water. So, I mean, you know, it's not like I was, you know, knocking back the hard stuff at this point. So the bartender cuts up a lime and puts one in my drink. This gets better. The next drive, Alabama scores. Again, I forget who did what and whatever. So I looked at the bartender and I thought, you know what? If I'm getting limes, well, Paul's getting a lemon. So I said, all right, cut a lemon, put it in his drink. Well, this goes back and forth for the rest of the game, except for the few seconds that I needed to use the restroom downstairs. And gentlemen, what did you guys do when I went downstairs?
Well, you know, when you're in the South and the an obnoxious Alabama fan leaves the room, and I don't mean that just about you. I mean that is most Alabama fans. So I'm not picking on you just independently. So I got the waitress on our side, and I said, look, every time Auburn does something good or if Bama does something bad and you're out here with us, please make sure to make a point, say something to this guy that's sitting here. Then we get the bartender on board and said, all right, here's the deal. We don't even have to ask you now. Every time Auburn does something good, you just put fruit in his glass. I mean, I want this glass full of limes or lemons every time something happens. I said, I'm not even going to look at you. That's the plan. So we're all on board, and Anthony comes back and sits down, and something happens, and Auburn scores or has a big play, and here come the waitress. Well, now this is how good our waitress was. She had gotten her friends involved around the bar, and now a lot of them are saying, oh, I'm sorry about your team. Oh, that was a bad play. Now, he's realized that the only time that could have happened was while he was in the restroom, man. And you know what? Boy, we really lived it up. And I don't know how many glasses of fruit you had, but it wasn't much water left in them when there was so much fruit.
There was – I got to tell you, you could imagine a typical bar glass, all right, and the entire lip was filled with lemon or lime slices except for just the little part where I could, you know, drink the water that was in there. So this whole thing, you know, of course, Auburn wins the game. They were thrilled. I was like, hey, you know, it's not the end of the world. It would have been the end of the world if Ohio State got into the national championship as a result, but that's another story altogether. We must have been there, I don't know what, 3-4 hours. I mean, we were laughing and joking and chuckling and taking pictures and everything else. I don't see these guys at the game the next day. I don't see their wives at the game, etc. And so we had exchanged, you know, numbers and made sure we had those things and whatnot and everything else. Everything's fine. And then I'm sitting at my house about 2 weeks later. And, Paul, what showed up?
Well, I thought in the spirit of continuing this gag and making sure you didn't forget that the Alabama team had just lost and you are already looking into this season, I guess 31 days away, I wanted to remind you with a Christmas present. And so I just went to the local store, picked up a case of limes, went to the post office, and just mailed a nice Christmas card with a box of limes right to his house. Now, the funny part
my
is,
house.
I hear back through Ron, it says that your son got the box.
My younger son gets the box, all right?
Yes.
And he gets the box, and he says, hey, Dad, this is for you. All right. He said, it's from Tennessee. And I'm like, I know a few people in Tennessee, but I wasn't expecting anybody to mail me anything. And I see Paul's name in the return address label, and I just burst out in laughter. I mean, I'm uncontrollable. You know, my 14-year-old is looking at me like, what in the world is going on here? So I open up the thing, and of course, with the limes being in the box, there's that somewhat of that smell comes out as the tape is ripped and the box is opened. And I start laughing even harder. And he's like, Dad, they're limes. And, of course, at that point, I just completely lose it. We end up taking a picture that I post on the SEC or on Ron's CFL Fans and SEC Country Facebook page. And, of course, I have to tag both of these guys. And the funny thing was my older son, who claimed he didn't like lemons or limes, finished off half the case in about 3 days. It was just hysterical. And, you know, Paul says to me later, he says, you know, I got a feeling, even though I had just met you and I didn't know you all that well, I got a feeling you were going to get a good laugh out of that and wouldn't be offended by it. And I was like, I am still laughing.
I figured that'd be the most unexpected Christmas present you could have delivered.
It was wonderful. Now, of course, you do know that if events turn somewhat differently for your team, you know, payback could get a little interesting.
Yeah, maybe that's a few years down the road.
See, I told you, Joe.
I'm not looking for that box in the mail this year.
You're not looking for that box anytime soon. Exactly. Exactly. Joe, you better chime in because I'm going to start laughing uncontrollably here in a minute, all right?
Well, I'm going to guess that over the course of the next few years, there'll be a lot of citrus in the U.S. Postal Service. And people start to wonder why. And, well, I think we figured out why. We can blame.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I'll tell you, though, the best part, really, all kidding aside, the best part was, you know, I come back upstairs from the restroom, and the waitress that Paul was just mentioned, I don't even sit down, and she comes up to me, and she's like, man, your team's having a tough day. And I, you know, she's Canadian. I don't know if she knows how important Auburn, Alabama is as a football game. I don't know if she appreciates the rivalry. I don't know anything. She may have just been put up to it, but her face was so serious. It was, man, your team is just not having a good day. And I turn to look at these guys, and they're like, what? What? I didn't say anything.
You know, another thing about the CFL I didn't mention earlier that I learned is when you go up there, it doesn't matter what team you pull for in the Canadian League, you wear your colors to that Super Bowl, right? The Grey Cup is every you can't tell what teams are playing because there's so many different colors up there. And I couldn't imagine coming to the States and going to any SEC, any college game where you just wore some random color, or you went to a pro game and you just picked, you know, another team outside of those two playing. And so the camaraderie that the CFL has is really a whole nother world. And, well, it brought all us together for a lot of laughs, too. But that I thought that was another unique piece to the CFL league.
Well, very good point.
And that kind of experience is available to everyone. It's affordable to most everybody. As long as you can afford the plane ticket, you should be able to have yourself a good time at Grey Cup. You couldn't buy that kind of experience at the Super Bowl, even if you had enough money to afford going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, absolutely. Ron and I were saying after the fans event with the commissioner that, you know, good luck if you were at the Super Bowl, seeing the commissioner of the National Football League give sort of the average Anthony and the average Ron, you know, 2 minutes of your time. And both of us have pictures that Randy Ambrosi took with us, you know, when that event was done. And Ron, you may have a better memory than I do at this point of that event, but I think he stayed at least 30 minutes after the event ended, just chatting with folks like you and me about, you know, I remember when I saw you play in Winnipeg, and I remember when you did this, and you know, it was like Randy Ambrosi was everybody's next door neighbor during that event.
Yeah, yeah, he is a very impressive guy, and I mean, he's got the perfect set of credentials. I mean, he played in the CFL. He's been a hugely successful businessman. He knows what it takes to run a business and make this league even more financially successful. And then he's super accessible and personable to, like you said, just the average fan. So I can't imagine a better guy to be in that position right now.
Well, and I think I mentioned to both Paul and to you, the reason that Joe was not there last year is he and his lovely wife had their first child 14-ish, 20-ish days or so before the Grey Cup. So he decided to play the dad card and not go to the game.
I remember that. Congratulations.
Exactly. No, all kidding aside, it was their first, and I saw as we were coming around the corner there in the it wasn't the Ottawa Convention Center, I forget the name of the building itself. One of the first things I see is the Winnipeg fans gathering or whatever it was called, and there was the gigantic blue colored balloons of Winnipeg's blue color. With the gigantic W, and so I took a picture, I sent it to Joe, and I said, you know, you're not here in person, but you are here in spirit. And he had introduced me to the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event the year before and encouraged my son and I to attend when the game was in Toronto. And I sent him a similar picture that morning. It was like, you know what, you're here in spirit, buddy, and you know, you can continue to play the dad card for a little while. It's okay. We get that. We've been there. But I know he is very much looking forward to getting back to the game this year in Edmonton.
That I am, and I'm also going to make Banjo Bowl an appearance at the Banjo Bowl this year as well. CFL can do rivalry games as well. That's for sure. I love those rivalries that they have, and probably aren't too many little boys in Wisconsin running around in bomber onesies. So I'm trying to do my best to do it right.
He's you guys will appreciate this. Like you guys have undoubtedly tried to brainwash your kids into rooting for that other football team in Alabama, he is brainwashing his kid to be a Winnipeg Blue Bomber fan.
That poor kid.
I'm going to get disconnected in a minute here, aren't I? Oh, real quick, Ron, I know you're going back up in this year to Edmonton for the Grey Cup. Paul, are you and your wife going to head up, or is she good for only one winter and wants to stay in the warmth of the South? Any chance you're going to get up there this year as well?
We are not going this year, but we have spoken a few times about that, and she's not out. I think skipping a year would not hurt her feelings, but I could see us back on the trail to get up there for another game.
Good. I am not going to be able to make it this year, unfortunately, but I am already have penciled in and hoping to pen it in, so to speak, the game in Calgary 18 months or so from now, whatever it is. So we may have some more limes and lemons that day. Who knows?
Oh, I'm all in. You just let me know when and where.
I will tell another little story that ties into the CFL in with the SEC. Paul has a business associate that lives in Ottawa. And so I met those guys through Paul. And matter of fact, the four of us went off drinking after the Grey Cup and I think closed the bar down. And these guys are serious football fans. And Paul has invited them to come to Auburn this year, this fall in October, and they're going to take
Tennessee
in
game.
An SEC game. Paul, you can elaborate on that a little if you want to.
Yeah, we have obviously said, hey, you know what, we had a great time with y'all up there. If you want to come down, let us know. And they sure did. They said, if you're serious, you just let us know. So Auburn has got Tennessee at home this year, and nothing like getting some two Canadians down to the South to take in the Auburn-Tennessee game. So, yeah,
it's
how that works, right? Make a connection. You know, Ron mentioned the other two guys, Bill and those fellas, coming down to an Auburn game, going up there another year later, getting these guys from Ottawa come down. So I'm pretty excited to be able to pull that together for them.
That is fun. What do you think, Joe? You and I to head down to Jordan-Hare for a game before too long?
Might have to put that in the plans if I could find any vacation time between the trips.
There you go. Now, of course, I will not indicate at all while I'm there what I think of the, you know, Auburn-Alabama rivalry. I will keep that to myself.
Probably good for your health.
Yeah.
I'll just bring a big old line with me and everybody will know.
Yeah, there you go.
Ron, Paul, any sort of closing thought from either of you?
No, I appreciate you having me on, and War Eagle to you. And hopefully we'll get you down for a Auburn game at some point.
That would be fun. All kidding aside, I think that would be a lot of fun. I've never been, inside the stadium. I've been to Birmingham, been to Tuscaloosa, but not to an Alabama football game. So that would be something that would be a whole heck of a lot of fun. And I know if my 19-year-old were sitting here, he'd be like, let's go right now. You know, he would want to be circling calendar dates and everything. But if we get a chance, absolutely, we will do it. That would be a lot of fun.
You let us know, and then we'll look at 18 months from now and see if we're headed north.
That would be perfect. That would be perfect.
Great. Ron and Paul, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having us on, guys. It was a lot of fun.
All right. See ya. Bye-bye.
You guys have a good rest of the week, huh?
Bye.
Thanks.
Good night, guys.
All right. I told you they were fun together, didn't I?
Yes. Yes, you did.
Oh, they are just a hoot. I got to tell you, they, like I said, they aren't brothers, but you'd swear they were brothers. They are just absolutely hysterical. So I'm glad we got them together. That was fun. All right, so what do we do? All quick right. Review, quick preview?
Yep, we'll catch that on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Rouge, White, and Blue. We are back. We spent a lot of time talking about the culture around the game earlier, the fun that the fans from the SEC country have with it. So let's keep this a little short this week because we've already gone quite a bit here. But we got to talk about the games last week and some games coming up this week. First thing I want to mention, though, is I was in my car this afternoon. And I don't usually listen to sports radio around here because they pretty much talk about the same thing all the time over and over again. But before I could throw a podcast on, I heard the name Alouettes come out of these car speakers, and I'm like, wait, I haven't turned a podcast on yet. Are they seriously? Yeah, so they were just finishing up at least a few minutes about the game, about Johnny Football and about him on, so... The word is spreading. We'll see.
The word is spreading. It is indeed. It is indeed.
It is for sure. Now, the Alouettes were hosting Edmonton this past week, and things didn't go quite as planned. They did have Vernon Adams starting at quarterback, and I thought he did an okay job. Probably would have garnered him another look had they not had Johnny Football behind him, but Edmonton took advantage of a lot of Montreal mistakes, a lot of points left on the board, and came away with the big one.
Yeah, and the thing is, for Vernon Adams, he could have gone 50 for 50 for 500 yards and 5 touchdown passes, and he would not be starting this week. You know, he was in a no-win situation, and some of that frustration boiled over a couple of days ago when he mentioned that he had heard the fans clamoring for Manziel, and it upset him. And I think I think any of us in that situation would have felt the same way. He did apologize for displaying a public moment of frustration, and then I think he was right in expressing his frustration, and I think it was quite big of him to also turn around and say, hey, you know what, maybe I should have kept that to myself. But absolutely. I thought he brought some life to that offense. I thought he brought some energy to that offense. He was not the reason they lost, but on any other team, if that was his first start, he would have had a second start.
Yep, he was playing that game for the other 8 CFL teams, unfortunately for him. But he did show what he could do. He does seem to have that playmaker ability, the consistency. He's never really had a chance to show he's had a lot of consistency. I'd love to see him just get the ball and go for a month, but nobody seems to want to do that. So, well, hopefully we get a chance to see that at some point. All right, well, let's move on to the next game here. Just kind of moving through these rapid fire. Not a lot to say about Toronto at Winnipeg. I was happy with it. You were not.
Yeah, let's just move on to the next one. That's absolutely right.
Okay.
You know, except to say, all kidding aside, except to say that, you know, you and I and Oz as well have discussed that there's something missing with that Toronto team, whether it's trying to find the right way or the right calls for James Franklin, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's the wide receivers, maybe it's all of the above. You know, it's now, at least for this week, McLeod Bethel Thompson's team saying that if he gets the same sort of lack of production from the receivers and from the running game that James Franklin received, it's not going to matter who's quarterbacking that team.
No, I mean, they really weren't doing all that much with Ricky Ray in the saddle to begin with.
Mm-mm.
Can't imagine it gets much better. Toronto always confuses me. I always think they're
going to be
a lot better or a lot worse than they are. And they make my off-season picks look dumb sometimes. But moving on, so if we can send the pity party away here for the moment. Ottawa at Hamilton. Ottawa coming away with a win, and they are looking to start to spread that lead that they have out east.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're going to do the previews in a couple of seconds, but, you know, both Eastern and Western division leaders could have a 3-game lead over their next closest rival, depending upon how the games go this week. You know, the thing that impressed me about Ottawa is that, you know, they took a couple of punches, but they bounced back. You know, let's not forget, they are now 4-0 against the rest of the league, except when they play those two games against Calgary. But maybe more importantly, Ottawa has the second best defense in a good chunk of the statistical categories across the CFL. Boy, I'll tell you and I agreed before the season, Ottawa was the team that we looked at and went, I'm not sure. Maybe we should have looked at that team and said, you know what? They got a chance to be pretty darn good.
Maybe I should have just reminded myself that Noel Thorpe was there and I would have felt a lot better about their chances. But Nope, I was too busy focusing on the fact that Toronto had a nice run at the end of the season. Things seemed to be clicking into place. And, well, yeah, that's going well.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we have Calgary in Saskatchewan. Calgary jumping off to a huge, huge lead at the end of the first quarter and kind of just put it in cruise control from there. Any thoughts on this one besides that got ugly pretty quickly?
You know, outside of the fact that I did not see Calgary getting out to a 24-0 lead against Saskatchewan, especially on the road, frankly, I didn't see Saskatchewan making that game as competitive as it was, at least for, you know, the second, third, and maybe into the middle of the fourth quarter. You know, let's face it, they basically, after that first quarter, became two heavyweight boxers throwing a lot of punches at each other. Boy, if Saskatchewan can get its offense together with that defense they have, oh man, they can be a threat to anybody, home or away, on any given week.
They sure could. I think that's been where the source of frustrations come from Saskatchewan, between the unorthodox positioning of some players and the fact it just feels like they aren't living up to their potential. I think that's what's having all the frustration coming out right now. A couple of big wins against West teams and all will be well again, but we've got to get there first. And I think they have the potential to do so. I just don't know if they're going to be able to put it all together.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. And continuing our rapid fire, let's talk predictions here. Ottawa in Toronto on Thursday night. What do you got here?
Again, unless there is some magic elixir that Mark Trestman has found this week to fix the Toronto offense, in much the same way you and I have said, there's virtually no reason to pick against Calgary at this point in the season. There's really not much of a reason to pick in favor of Toronto at this point in the season. I suspect this is a game that Ottawa wins, and based on the last couple of efforts we've seen out of the Argonauts, this might not be pretty.
yeah, Ottawa has been hot, and Toronto has been not. So I'm going to go with Ottawa as well, and I'm not going to have too many worries about that one. But then a doubleheader on Thursday night, kind of a questionable scheduling as far as I'm concerned, because a lot of people are going to work that Friday morning. Saskatchewan at Edmonton, a really good game that I'm sure a lot of people out east aren't going to see.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, I know the league is really pushing those Thursday schedule games. I get that, you know, there might be a reason that Commonwealth is not available on Friday or Saturday night or even Sunday afternoon. So who knows, but it is, you know, it is an odd time to have that game. You know, something to think about with this game though, being on Thursday, is Saskatchewan has a short week. You know, they played on Saturday night. They now only have essentially one, maybe two legitimate practices, and then have to turn around and fly to Edmonton, you know, to play this game. Zach Collaros, I think, is going to be the starting quarterback. Daron Carter, I think, is going to be back on offense. And let's face it, Edmonton's defense is not really, it doesn't really have all the pieces and all the players back together again. I think this will be a closer game than people suspect. But I think right now I'm more comfortable figuring Edmonton winning this game than I am figuring that Saskatchewan might be ready to pull an upset. So I'd go with the Eskimos in this game.
I'm in the same boat. If it was in Saskatchewan and Edmonton missed a team on short rest, I would probably take the Riders here. But given that that is reversed, I'm going to go with Edmonton. They are going to put up a heck of an effort, though. I don't see this being all that high scoring, even with Mike Riley involved. Probably something in the realm of 21-17. I just don't see the Riders having it all together on offense quite yet. All right, well, let's go ahead and talk about the game that everybody's talking about. We've got Hamilton at Montreal. A lot of talk for a game in the East with the records as they are, but I think there's somebody playing quarterback that might be of interest. What do you got here?
Oh, boy. You know, when you get past the hype and the anticipation of Johnny Manziel and his first, again, not counting preseason, his first game action in the Canadian Football League, when you get past all of that, either Montreal is going to be 1-6 and its season probably over, or if Montreal wins, Hamilton is going to be 2-5 along with Montreal, but Hamilton will have then lost four consecutive games. You know, I'm not one who says or who believes very much in the philosophy of a must-win game, but this somewhat feels like one. I think Hamilton's going to win because I think Hamilton still has the better overall team, but in much the same way that we're starting to scratch our heads about just exactly how good Toronto might be or might not be, Hamilton, oh boy, if they're 2-5 at the end of this game, there's going to be an awful lot of questions, especially if Manziel puts up a lot of points and a lot of yards. What in the world were they thinking when they traded him? I'm going with Hamilton, but as you can tell by the tone of my voice, I don't have a lot of confidence in that pick.
No, and you probably well that you don't, because I just have the gut feeling that there's going to be one or two plays that are going to swing this game. And Hamilton special teams haven't been all that special this year, among other things. Jeremiah Mazzoli's had a lot of long fields, so that may have something to do with the fact that his touchdowns are less than his interceptions at this point. But I just have this weird feeling that there's going to be a couple of weird bounces that are going to go Montreal's way. There might be one or two explosion plays on offense from them. I think their defense is going to make a play. I think their special teams is better than Hamilton. I could see this one going Montreal's way, especially if they get some momentum early and get the crowd on their side.
And chances are it's going to be a good sized crowd in Montreal. They've been demanding this essentially for the better part of 10 or 11 days, and which isn't a long time, I admit, but they've been demanding this from basically the second the trade was announced, and they're going to get it. And, you know, again, of the four games this weekend, this is the one that you know, if I were putting money down, it'd be like, yeah, I'm keeping that money in my pocket because it just, I can't get a good feel for this game. I think Hamilton wins, but that's there's no confidence in that selection.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of careful what you wish for later on, mm-hmm. but I think for 1 week, Montreal fans will be happy. And no, I'm not crazy, or at least I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the final game, BC against Calgary, in Calgary. So don't do well in CFL Pick'em if you pick against Calgary, so I'm going to take them. I do think Travis Soule is going to put up a fight. I don't think this is a romp by any means,
mm-hmm.
but I can't see a scenario where BC comes out on top.
Unless Calgary has the kind of first quarter that Saskatchewan had last week, and this Calgary team doesn't give off the impression that they're going to flub-a-dub and make a series of big mistakes in a game. I'm going with Calgary as well in this game. Absolutely. With Travis Lule, I think BC has an optimism and a fight in them that they didn't seem to have with Jonathan Jennings. But Calgary winning this game by, say, 10-ish points feels about right. And again, part of that is just defensively, Calgary is at a level where BC is not.
All right, well, we've gotten through the review and preview rather quickly here. Any final thoughts this week?
Just a final thought that while I like the discussion and I like the hype and I like the talk that is, Johnny Manziel playing in Montreal, I'm still not convinced that he's going to live up to the hype. And what I mean by that is I think he is probably very rusty. I think he is still demonstrating that he is a far more mature person than he was 2 or 3 years ago. The young man seems to have a heck of a lot of confidence, and I think he's going to need it because there are going to be some bumpy spots. And as you and I and others have talked about, it's now put up or shut up time, and the list of names who have gone to Canada thinking that they can be successful in the CFL, that list of failures is quite long. I'm not saying he's going to fail. I'm just not convinced he's going to succeed to the level that all this hype suggests he will.
We're thinking along the same lines a lot tonight.
I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing, but I am agreeing with you on this point as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, for Dr.
That, and again, okay. Well, I was going to say that, and think about this. If Calgary, Saskatchewan, Ottawa, and Montreal are the winning teams this week, Calgary and Ottawa will both have 3-game leads in their divisions. Almost, again, nothing's guaranteed, but darn near putting those two divisional championships in their back pocket. Does that mean Calgary Ottawa 3 in this season and Calgary Ottawa 2 in Grey Cup world? I don't know, but they could certainly take big, big comfortable leads.
Yeah, you can't win your division this early, but you could certainly lose it, and there's teams that have mm-hmm. put themselves out of contention early. We will see if Calgary, again, more so Ottawa, can keep the momentum going, but I would say they're in the captain's seat right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that will do it for us this week on the Rouge, White, and Blue. For Dr. Rouge and Joe Pitcher, have yourself a good day.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Networks on Twitter.